Broken Tail Dog Podcast with Josh Accardo. Hello, welcome to the show. Glad you're listening. Thanks again for doing that. It's really cool of you. As some of you may know, I work for an interactive theater company called Accomplice. Accomplice has been doing shows in New York City for about 11, 12 seasons, which equates to years for those of you not in the biz. That being said, Accomplice is a show where it's kind of improv theater. It's a lot of like kind of scavenger hunt, part sightseeing. It just really kind of combines all the great things you can do in New York City in one. You get to have a lot of fun doing it and have a couple drinks, and it's good for tourists, but it's also good for some New Yorkers. Anyways, point being, the creative director for that show is a woman named Quinn Posner. I have Quinn on the show today. She is my guest. She's great. Met Quinn doing the show when I started 3 seasons ago, and she was really talented, and she has a cool story. And finally, after 3 years, I was able to sit her down for an hour and chat with her. So, enjoy Quinn. She's really great. Yes, it is I. It is him. It is Josh Accardo, the one and only, that's breathing like James Gandolfini right now on the mic. And I have in front of me a friend of mine who I find not only extremely talented, but also very lovely, the one and only Quinn Posner. Say hello.
Hi.
So Quinn, that was amazing. So Quinn and I work on a show called Accomplice. And Accomplice, for those of you that don't live in New York City and haven't visited New York City and doesn't know about what's going on around town, Accomplice is a very well-known show that's been around for about 12 years. It's an improv theater show. It's part like scavenger hunt. It's part what did you say before?
Part tour, part game,
part greatness. And I've been with the company about 3 seasons, I think, and we're coming up on the end of the 12th. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Quinn is not only – she started out as an actor in the show.
Mm-hmm.
About and 6 years now you are ago, the creative director.
Yes.
That's – so how long have you been with Accomplice?
I started as an actor, I want to say 6 or 7 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I started only playing one role, and then they started kind of mixing it up a little and letting me try some other parts. Mm-hmm. And I wrote a children's show for Accomplice to start producing, and that was what kind of put me up for the boss had it in mind that maybe I would be able to fulfill more of a role than just an actor and mm-hmm. maybe do some writing for the company, maybe yeah. some directing. So now I get to do a lot of the creative behind the scenes stuff and develop new shows for Accomplice.
So the reason why I wanted to have Quinn on is because not only do I think she's really funny, but also I think you have a really interesting story that led you into the arts.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a story that I don't even really know fully. I just know tidbits from the very few times that we've had in-depth conversations. So for those of you that never have been actors, which I'm sure many of you have not because we're so special and broke, what's great about Accomplice is not only do they give you an opportunity to be an actor and kind of reach out. If you're an improviser, which is very different than just being a standard actor.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Quinn does tons of characters. And one of my favorite ones that Quinn does is she's like this bitchy waitress in this one show. There's numerous shows that Accomplice does. And one of them, the first time I ever saw Quinn work, was she was like this bitchy waitress and you nail it. I don't know if because you're a bitch or do you –
you know,
body bitch.
To be fair, I think that it's the most – I love playing this part and it's because it's – therapeutic, because if you are an actor, mm-hmm. you've been a nanny, you've been a waitress, you've mm-hmm. worked at, I don't know, an ice cream shop. You've had to do these shitty, shitty, terrible jobs because it's really difficult to make a living just doing acting. So of course I was a waitress, I was a restaurant manager, I was a bartender. So I have a lot of experience in the service industry. And to get to jump back into that role that have the goal to be as nasty as possible to the customer.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so wonderful.
Because I can't tell. The reason why I'm being kind of vague is because it's part of the storyline. I don't want to give it, you know, too much away for a lot of you that might come to New York and want to do this. But it's a role where she has to be kind of rude. Like, that's the role.
Yeah,
to be a little rude, to throw off the audience for a specific reason. And I think it's amazing you're so good at it.
Oh, I'm very lucky too, because that role, and again, it's very difficult to explain these things without giving too much away.
Yeah.
But what is so fun about Accomplice are playing the parts where the audience has gotten used to meeting all our actors, and our actors are doing a particular kind of shtick where they're all fun and painting with really broad strokes, and mm-hmm. there's this improvising and accents, and it's very silly.
Yeah.
They're not necessarily supposed to blend in to mm-hmm. their surroundings. So when you get to play a role that's tricking the audience or playing it a little bit more
straight.
Naturalistic,
yeah, yeah.
That's not
that.
Our style. So it stands out in this mm-hmm. very fun way that the audience is always going to appreciate it even more than what some of the other actors are doing.
Yeah.
When actually, in fact, as somebody that plays a bunch of different characters, it is easiest for me
to be to be something that's not necessarily in tune with what everyone else is doing, but very natural.
I didn't train in comedy, and I'm used to performing. I did a lot of my background was doing straight theater. And mm-hmm. so just to have to believably be a person for me is not a really hard thing
it's
to
not a
do.
Reach,
I can
that's
play
your training.
Natural.
That's your training.
I can do naturalistic. So, but when you are doing one of the other roles, your job is to make people laugh. It's really clear if you're succeeding or not.
Yeah, no,
and
you're right.
It
yeah.
really hurts when you don't.
It stings.
It does. It messes with your head. And you end up at the end of the day going back and kind of beating yourself up for little missed moments.
Yeah, I know.
And
you think, what the fuck
the audiences
did I do wrong?
That didn't dig your stuff, and you could tell. And you can have the highest of highs and the lowest of lows.
No, that's what stand-up. Stand-up is that in general. That's what I think that's what's interesting about doing the show for me anyways, is that how do I put this? You get in a position where you're like you said, you have to be kind of ridiculous because it's New York City. And what's great about this, and this is why I'm pushing it up front, is that for those of you that have never been to New York before, I think it's paramount to do the show because you get to walk around Lower Manhattan, which is super historical, but then also you get to engage with these people who have to be kind of crazy for you to actually know they're not just standard crazy people in New York. And they fit this kind of mold, and you're trying to get this like response out of them, but also not try to overdo it to a point where they're like, look at this cheesy fucking guy. He's so cheesy. That's like my biggest fear.
Yeah.
Because I get in front of strangers every night. Like I do shows all the time. I'm stand-up. That's where I mm-hmm. was built from. That's what I do. So bombing is something I'm familiar
right.
with, but being cheesy is not something I'm familiar with. So now you have to get into a character, do your thing, and then also make people not only go, I get it, like I understand this guy has to be this guy,
right.
but also I'm really enjoying him being this guy and not being like, okay, what the fuck? Like we want to do the next clue.
Yeah, you know?
And that's what I love about that character that we're talking about now, specifically the waitress, is that in this other show that you do this waitress and you can actually be – the long game. You can be very natural, very ruthless.
And I'm not there to entertain them.
Not at all. You can be what you have to be.
And if I was too much in any direction, even rude,
that.
It would be obvious that I were part of it.
Yeah, yeah. It's so great.
It's a really different exercise in acting to get to do that. Mm-hmm. And I know that the actors all like doing that too,
to take
a turn at that instead of – you know, you sit across from 8 groups a day and you're just trying to get a laugh out of them and mm-hmm. make them smile. That's a lot of work.
It is. I think that's what people underestimate, is they don't understand how much work goes into it. And the thing is, when you do a show like this, and the thing is, this show, in my opinion, is one of the pioneers of improv theater.
And immersive theater.
Totally. Because recently, what's the one that came out where everyone goes to different rooms and sees different Shakespeare? Like
is
with
it
Hamlet?
Sleep No More.
Yeah. So it's Macbeth, right? Is everyone seeing Macbeth in different rooms?
It's basically a hybrid of Macbeth meeting, Hitchcock meeting, like early 1900s, you know, like fun, speakeasy atmosphere. It's so stylized. It's mm-hmm. so beautiful. And where they kind of excel in atmosphere and movement mm-hmm. and tone.
Yeah.
I think we are giving the audience a lot more agency.
Mm-hmm.
Things will not happen unless the audience
engages.
Propels them
to
happen.
Sure. Yeah.
Our actors are not on a track the way mm-hmm. they are in Sleep No More. They're
so
really
you, not to cut you off, but Sleep No More, have you been to it?
3 times.
Okay, so you understand, like, so what I haven't been to it yet. But I've heard that it's like a lot of the actors kind of want to be up close and personal with the audience, right? They like – you get
– yes, but picture it's like stylized. So it's moments where a beautiful woman is going to come up and like touch your hair and dance with you and then walk away. But you get that she kind of does that 3 times a night when the music is hitting a certain cue, and it's okay. an amazing moment to be part of. And it's magical because theater's magical. And yeah. when it happens to you, you will feel special.
You totally will.
You will. Mm-hmm. You'll buy into it.
Yeah.
And you are definitely, believe me, as somebody that's gone 3 times, I'm a huge fan. I am buying what they are selling.
Even that you're in the industry and you realize like,
but
that's her job. And it's still great.
And it's sexy and it's mm-hmm. dark and it's magnetic and it's a really amazing thing to see. What we do is so different because we're doing comedy.
Yeah.
That's an entirely different breed than what they're up to.
Sure.
We can't manipulate our space.
No.
So we have an actual real sense of danger mm-hmm. in a fun way because we're on the street. Anything can happen, and we're not able to make sure we don't have, you know, 3 stage managers in a room watching you deal with this actor.
Yeah.
You're just in a room with that actor.
You're dealing with – that's what another thing I wanted to point out and what I wanted to get to so people understand, because I've talked about the show before, and mm-hmm. I've had Betsy on before who, you know, right. owns the show. And what I want to get clear with everyone is that we are on the streets. When I say that, I'm not trying to be some funny hipster saying that we're deep in the streets. We're literally on the streets of New York, and yeah. no one really knows what we're doing. Now, granted, we've built relationships with the people in the neighborhoods because we've been there for so long. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, if shit gets fucked up,
it's unpredictable.
You got to deal with it,
we
which
can't
is
control.
Great and awful all at the same time.
Completely. It's a beautiful
yeah.
chaos. And I think that
yeah,
it's
yeah, yeah, yeah.
a big
a
vote of confidence in the world on our part. But it's also anything that could go wrong has definitely gone wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And that I think the audience sensing that and having to understand that is part of the show.
The best audiences I've had, I don't know about you, but the best groups I've ever had are the ones that really embrace the reality of the performance, where they understand. And that's even with stand-up, where they go, holy shit, like someone has to come in a room. And then not only they got to come in a room and then also do a character and then be funny with the character mm-hmm. and then improvise off of our energy.
Right.
Which a lot of times we're dealing with people that are walking and having to figure shit out. They're a little drained. Like I know uh-huh. my character that I play a lot, I get people that are kind of drained. That's a task. Like, and then you get people that are at the tail end of the whole fucking thing with that character we're mm-hmm. talking about. So now you have to go, all right, let's – we have to rev it up.
You know what? We ask a lot more of our audiences mm-hmm. than a lot of shows do, including something like Sleep No More, where you're in a mask and you've got a safe distance and you're an observer. We definitely are asking our audiences to be a part of the show, to engage.
Yeah.
We're basically adults saying, do you guys want to play pretend with us?
Sure.
And we hope that they're going to be
the kind of
people that mm-hmm. actually want to.
Because Sleep No More, like you said, is very sexy. Like the thought yeah. of putting a mask on, you get to go to this controlled environment and be a part of this.
But you're
happening.
A watcher, right?
You're an observer.
Yeah.
Like these people, you're in it. When you come to our show, you're fucking in it.
It's not forget immersive. It's completely interactive.
Yeah.
It's a one step much further because the props are in your hands. The mm-hmm. puzzles are yours to solve. And the actors, if you want to get information from them, you have to ask them. You
yeah.
can't. We're not going to
twiddle your
it's
thumbs.
It's not scripted.
We're not going to.
You're not
you going to
go,
anything.
Okay, I've been with these people 5 minutes now. I'm going to say this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You've got to know.
It's different every yeah. single time. And it's so funny because people – one of the most common questions I get at the end of the show is people say, do you change it a lot? And the answer is I don't know how to answer it because mm-hmm. I say, well, not really. The New York show is always going to be in the same locations. The actors are going to change all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And not only are the actors going to change, but – if you, Josh, are in the show that day, you have 8 different groups. One might be a sweet 16.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you're going to speak to them differently than you are a drunk bachelor
sure.
party that
yeah.
might come in after that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sure,
yeah.
you're like, here's my rated R and here's my PG.
Yeah.
And you're feeling out the audience and so is every other actor every time. So mm. nobody's getting the same show.
No, you're not. You're getting the same outcome, hopefully, if you're smart
right.
enough to figure out the puzzles, which are pretty elementary. So if you're not figuring out, you're probably a dipshit.
Yeah.
But I can
true
say that
story.
On my show, but I can't say that on their show. But at the end of the day, like, yeah, you're going to get a different show. And I think what's great is that why I call it a pioneer of shows is because in the last 3 years specifically, mm-hmm. I've been with the show 3 years. And I think because I'm with the show, I pay attention more and more to things that are going on that look similar to what we do. Now I see escape rooms and I
Escape
Sleep No
Rooms
More.
Is huge.
Huge.
And, you know, that's such a smart moneymaker on their
part.
And
it still kind of cuts from what we're doing. I mean, I'm not saying people are copying us, but we do touch on a lot of levels of these things. And yeah. you realize, like, wow, it's a pioneering show. So I guess the question I have for you, no one gives anybody any points or any business because they might have been the first, you know? As a creative director now, how do you see with what's going on now with trends in the kind of interactive theater environment, if you will, if that's the right terminology, how do you go, okay, how do we up the fucking ante on this and change it or build it? Like, what do you think? Like, what do you see?
So I would say that we directly deal with people coming to us and saying, what do you do? We say what we do. And then they say, I like this. I don't like this. I like this, but can we this? Right now, the two shows that we're working on are, one is a stationary show. So the idea that even though Accomplice does this really fun thing where you move through the city, we had a lot of people saying during the holiday season, I want to have a big party and I don't want to get split up. I have 50 people and we want to all be together. I have 100 people and we all want to be together.
I mean, that kind of hinders
the weather, sure.
The New York show a
yeah,
lot.
Yeah, that's why we close every season.
Yeah, and
season.
That eliminates, what, like 4 months of business, right?
Right.
Around that?
Right. Months? Well, the Village we run year-round because it's only 2 hours and the characters are more indoors.
Yeah.
But this stationary cocktail party show, Cabinet of Curiosities it's called, and basically all the characters in it are ex-carnies, which gives the actors just fucking amazing stuff
to
do.
Yeah, yeah,
like
yeah.
They're having a blast. and they're all working at the bar.
Okay.
So you're completely immersed in this bizarre institution where you've got all these characters around you that you're dealing with, but you don't have to deal with them. So you're going to have the people at the holiday party that are like, oh, it's an open bar. I don't want to talk to the actors.
Okay.
And you're going to have the people that are totally invested that are playing.
And talking to the actors.
Yeah, and we give them gems and they can bet on weird games and there's an adult prize wall. And then they also have an option to look for a missing recipe for moonshine and all these ingredients. And that is something you would have to deal with the actors if you wanted to engage in. But that's an option to engage. That's a sort of choose your own adventure. And that's something that I think... I can't think of another company that kind of is giving people that sort of, you don't have to be a part of this and it's not hokey and it's not dinner theater.
Yeah, 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 no.
And you can all be together and just chat with one another.
And the thing about it, the thing I can really attest to with the show and what the company does is, granted, we're in a world where we all need to make some fucking money, right?
Right.
That's just a reality. But also the show has integrity to a sense where I remember being in one specific specialized situation where someone goes, hey, I want to do this for my company. Can you build a story around this?
Yeah.
And I was in this part of Accomplice, which was the side piece of it, where this guy wanted his company to come to this thing. And we created this whole story for this guy.
Right.
Where
he wanted to be kidnapped.
It was
he wanted
days.
His staff to find him. We had
we had
Josh and another actor lurking outside restaurants they were eating in.
Beating the shit out of him. It was crazy.
Oh, it was
amazing and great. And you know what sucked is that I wish like that because it was so great and the guy was so engaging and was so perfect. I really was like, damn. I wish his people would have got really into it. Just
because
you need to suspend disbelief for certain parts of what we do. And I think the part that is difficult for us is that we are not stationary. We literally are all around everywhere, right? We're not in a one environment where people go, well, we're in a theater. Like if you're in Eugene O'Neill Theater, you go, I'm out of play.
Right.
When you're with Accomplice, you're like, I don't know
I'm doing.
So if you're not ready to go balls to the wall with it and just be in the moment.
So based on personality.
Yeah, it really is.
And
you do such great work.
When we have great groups, though, I'm sure to tell them at the end of the day, I'm like, you guys, this is what you guys had fun because of you.
Mm-hmm.
It is what you make of it. And believe me, it is because you know how it is. If you have a group that's giving you nothing and they're looking at you and they are acting like they're in the Eugene O'Neill Theater and you're on a stage and they're not participating.
Mm-hmm. It's very difficult.
Your scene is going to be a little more brief.
It is.
A little not as fun and playful.
Yeah.
And you get a great group and you think, do I really
have to
get them to the next spot or can we just hang?
Let me ask you a question. This is interesting because I know I have you here and I can get you candid. To your point, because everyone knows I play a Russian mobster a lot of the time with the show.
Mm-hmm.
I have to physically sit with people at a dinner-esque table, which even if it, like, if you've ever been on a first date or a blind date and you have to sit at a table with somebody and they're eating and they're drinking, that's fucking awkward in itself.
But now you have to be funny and be engaging with these people. And if you get a group that loves to talk to you, and now you're cooking, man. Now you're on. And then you're like, damn, I wish you guys could sit here forever and drink wine with me. And then you get the group that doesn't, like you said, that doesn't want to interact. And you're like,
shouldn't you go somewhere?
And I have to keep them there because they have to get the food and do thing. And like, so then you're like, now I have to eat and look at them while they're – and I'm not usually eating, obviously, because that's for them. It's food's for them. But I'm like looking at them like,
oh, you can eat the food.
But well, I know, but I try not to because
fried stuff all day. You're gonna get sick.
That's what I mean. If I keep eating, I'm gonna shit my pants.
Yeah.
So I have to watch them eat, which is cool. But when they don't want to talk, and now I'm at a point where I feel so good in the awkwardness that I love to engage with the most quiet and reserved person.
Yeah.
So you find your little places, but it is not an easy job. It's an amazing job, but not an easy
job.
And
it's a study in humanity. Like, sometimes really I feel like I'm not an actor. I'm like an anthropologist or something. And
but
I'm
do you feel like almost like you're doing logistics and administration when you get the groups that don't want to talk? You end up being like, so I definitely have to get them out in 17 minutes. Like, you want to – because at the end of the day, we're all entertainers. And we're not making so much money that we're there for the entertainment part. We're there get the chops tuned, whatever, if you will, whatever.
Yeah.
I want to be funny. I want to, like, try stuff out.
Everybody does. I mean, that's –
want to do that.
You know what? And that's why it's actually an easy show in some ways to cast for, because you get these talented people. We have an amazing group of people, and everyone just wants to do well. You don't worry that anybody is going off to their spot, because that's another funny thing about having a job with accomplice. Nobody's watching you. Your director's not sitting in the audience, like, taking notes that they give to you at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So everyone, there's this trust system in place of just, like, go out there. I remember Betsy told me the other day, Betsy's the owner of the company.
She's on the show. Look at episode, whatever. I'll tell you.
She said she remembers when she used to send the actors off to their different spots, and she would just say to them as they walked away, okay, be funny. And it is this feeling of, like, just go out. We want you to go out there, and we hope you're doing a good job. But everyone is, because people that are into comedy, you feel it.
Your payment's the laugh.
Yes.
I mean, I realize I make a decent living now off of comedy, but there's been a long period of time where I made nothing, and the payment was laughing. Mm-hmm. So that never changes for me. It never changes that. The ultimate payment – I mean, I've done gigs where they've paid me $1,000, but I didn't do well. And I hate it. I feel awful. I don't want to do it again. I either blame the audience or I blame myself. And now I'm so professional where it really does. I'm convinced it's the audience, because I know now. I know my parameters. I understand I'm good. And if you don't laugh, that's pretty much on you. But I think that's really great that you don't have anyone micromanaging the actors. So at the end of the day, like, you trust that people really just want to be good. Like,
yeah, you guys go out
there.
It's
one of the few jobs ever that they just trust.
Nobody's there going, well, I'm getting one over on accomplice and I'm going out and just bombing. Nobody does that as a comedian.
Yeah, no one, because the pride is just too strong.
Right, and I think people learn a lot from being part of accomplice. I think people, what I like to hear is, we've got people that do stand-up. We've got people that teach at the Pit. We've got people that do all these other things. And I feel like doing accomplice informs some of their other stuff. Like,
it really does.
And I think that you learn through accomplice how to listen to your audience in a completely different, heightened way.
Yes, totally. Because I've interviewed and auditioned and got offered jobs with other improvisational theater companies that do something that we do, but on a very oddly grandiose scale that doesn't necessarily appeal to the sanctity, if you will, of improv theater for me. And nothing's like what I do in accomplice. So you're completely right. Like, it's a very special, unique thing, and it's amazing.
And it's big enough now that I feel like it's becoming a little bit of a world unto itself, where we get these people that are from – a lot of our actors are from the Pit, and I feel like I go to the Pit now to see one of them doing a show, and I see other ones in the lobby, and I feel like there is this little
– community of improv.
Yeah, I love it. And they say, oh, when they get the job with us, they go, oh, I didn't know, you know, Carrie works for you and Jamie works. And they know people. And it's really cool.
It's funny because I actually because I'm so immersed in the stand-up scene, but I have also trained with UCB and all these other, you know, improv theater places, which ultimately led me to the gig at Accomplice. Mm-hmm. It's two different worlds. And people that are into comedy, sometimes they don't understand because usually it's kind of two separate forms. Like stand-up is a very lonely, independent thing. Like it, as a stand-up, mm-hmm. I take on the world. As an improv actor, especially if you're doing long-form Herald, you're taking on the world with six other people mm-hmm. where you go, okay, we can build this as a group and I can yes and with Quinn all day. You and I together can do all kinds of crazy shit mm-hmm. because you got my back, I got yours. That's the whole point of improv. And with stand-up, it's very different. And I don't think people understand that right away. Like improv, because people love Whose Line Is It Anyways? And UCB is huge because uh-huh. a lot of their players are major motherfuckers in the improv game. Like, right. you know? So when it comes to stand-up, it's a very different mentality. It's very stand-up's very dark. It's very intense and it's very lonely.
You know,
lonely.
I think that's the thing. Like, I feel like I have been attracted to stand-up for a long time mm-hmm. and repelled by it. And I don't think I'll ever do it.
It's a hard world. It's brutal.
And I
it's
just don't think I have the emotional chops to do it.
Yeah, no, and it's really funny you say that and really insightful on your end because that's how I started. And now that I've done tons of improv, I love it. But there is something about stand-up where I go, fuck, that's like where you really cut your teeth, man. That's where you're kind of fist-fighting this imaginary world that you're in because you're trying to build something where you go, hey, stranger, it's just me. Now I'm going to try to get you to do something that's totally not something you control. I have to make you do something that is beyond your control. I have to make you laugh.
Yeah.
And improv does that too. But improv, there's something happier about improv. There really is.
No, and it's what you said. It's that you've got support. You've got backup. And if you fail, you fail together. Like, mm-hmm. I think that somebody comes back and doesn't like Accomplice. We have a company behind us. Yeah. We have stage management. We have this kind of – we're a group mm-hmm. and we're a company.
We rely on each other. We really
do.
If
you are a company of one, there's no one to blame at the end of the day except yourself. And even if you hate the audience, you versus the audience does not feel
very
supported.
No, like if we have a show like I with Accomplice, just to, you know, to kind of tie this loose end of this part of the interview – if you have a bad show with Accomplice, I know for a fact that the actors that are remotely close to you, so there's a number of actors you deal with, but the ones that are probably two or three separated from each other, they deal with each other more often, and you go, what the fuck was up with that group?
And everybody does that.
And then you'll go, oh yeah, that was kind of weird, and you have a team of people going, I understand where you're coming from as an artist, right? Mm-hmm. In stand-up, you don't get that. So you started out as a stage actor.
Mm-hmm.
Jumping into comedy is brutal. Making people laugh, I think, is the hardest thing to do. Because yeah. I've studied Meisner, and I've studied improv, and I've studied stand-up.
Yeah.
And out of all three, with years of study on both, or all three rather, making people laugh is like the worst for
Making
me.
People,
it's
I
very,
think,
very hard
yeah.
as far as like difficulty. And now your paycheck and your livelihood and a lot of stuff you do now is connected to making people laugh. What led you to that?
Oh, my God. It's almost like just bad luck. No, I'm just kidding. But
agreed. Everything in our universe is bad luck.
How did I get here being an actor? No. I think that that's a really interesting question. I guess I started doing a bunch of different theater in high school. I mean, I had done theater before
from?
That. I'm from Denver, and I went to...
So you're a West Coast girl. Like, I'm a West Coast man.
Midwest,
Is Denver
say.
Midwest? Colorado?
We're Midwest.
You smoke a lot of dope for being Midwest, though. Not
no,
you specifically,
yeah,
but the state.
It's true. We got lucky with that. I mean...
So you're from Denver.
I'm born and raised in Denver.
So you're used to altitude.
I'm used to altitude. I'm a great skier. I don't know how to snowboard. My parents snowboard and I ski.
When did you move to New York?
18. I moved to New York 11 days before 9/11.
So you literally, out of high school, went
direct to New York.
Let's go to New York.
Yeah.
Because you were in, I'm assuming you were into theater in high school.
College. Okay. Well, oh, so I
well,
went
18,
to,
you're not in college.
18, you start college.
You start college. So you said you came to New York to do college.
Yeah. So I went to, basically, for my high school, I went to the coolest high school. I went to Denver School of the Arts. It's a public school, but it's a magnet school. So you audition to get in.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
So I would audition every year in theater.
It's California. I'm sure New York has these too, but California has a lot of these. So yeah. I understand what that. The magnet school is like a thing. Like,
it's
oh,
a cool
fuck.
Thing. Yeah.
You're all right.
Yeah.
You're at other weirdos and oh, be
it was
not weird.
So weird and yeah. so, great. So great. And yeah. so there was no, it was perfect because there were no sports teams and there was no sort of, if you were talking about people in terms of cliques, it was like, oh, I thought you were a dancer.
I thought you were a Shakespearean
actor. And that was like a
actor.
Compliment. Whereas you'd be like, what are you, some kind of techie? And that was like the tech major. So it was like the language in high school was very different. But everyone was an artist. It was really, really cool.
Well, so what made you even apply to that? Are your parents artists? They recognize that, oh, Quinn has like a thing with arts.
Yeah,
she's singing Little Mermaid all day.
No, I'm tone deaf. But I was a little ham for sure. Like I was in all the middle school play. I was Puck in seventh grade and – went on to be Puck as an adult once. Yeah. So it was one of those.
Puck.
I'm a big Puck. I'm a total.
You're a dumb
Puck. Off. Total. That's me. And so I, after that, I went to Sarah Lawrence.
It's very early on to understand that you're into the arts.
My parents were really supportive.
That's interesting because I am a guy who's the food put on my table is from football. A lot of my uncles and family members are coaches. I became a college football player, but I remember being 14. And really being like, I really want to be in Greece and not really thinking that was all right. Not that my family was like, you're a fucking homo. You do that.
Right.
Like, they weren't like that. But
they
I realized that being good at sports was a lot more important than being good at the arts, right? So I never would even think of going like, hey, mom and dad, can I go to this performing arts school? Because I was good at sports. I was super nerdy and super, super weirdo. But if you're good at sports, you can get by.
You know, my lower and middle school, whatever, kindergarten through eighth grade, I went to a totally expensive private school, and it had a huge emphasis.
So you're close to your
sports.
Family, are you?
Very.
Okay, so your family's been very supportive of you. You're one of the – that's what I think improv is – that's the difference of improv actors. Not that you're an improv actor solely. I mean, you're a very trained actor. But when I look at comedians, a lot of them have a lot of shit, like a lot of baggage. And I meet some improv actors, and they have the baggage of I have that bug of performing. But when I go, yeah, hey, my dad used to beat me, they'll go, oh, my dad actually brought me to school every day. Like, it's a very different story, which is interesting. So you're saying that you came up through the ranks, elementary, middle school. Your family goes, Quinn has a thing with performing. She's good at it. She loves it. Let's figure it out.
You know, there was that, but there was also that I think that even though they could afford to send me to this private school, I was coming home and crying all the time. And
What age?
So I left there in eighth grade. And middle school, 14. Sixth, seventh, eighth, was particularly hard because I was like, you know, everyone's making fun of me because my jacket's not North Face or because I – whatever. Like,
whatever
there was
it
a
is.
Lot of brand – no, but it was very specifically rich white girl meanness.
Really?
It was like mean
even though your
stuff.
Parents obviously can afford to send you there, so if you wanted those things, you probably could have them.
I thought
that
I did want
your...
those things. Do you know
really?
What I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't smart enough to go, well, this is bullshit. And my parents were going, it's weird that you don't go to school with a kid that doesn't own a computer and you're worried about the brand, that every shirt you wear be from like Abercrombie.
Were you worried
like, it's
about
gross.
That?
I was totally worried about
you were.
That.
So you were saying that you saw people with these things and people said things to you where you're like, well, shit, I should have these things. And you would go home and go, how come I don't have a computer? How come I don't have –
But I did – no, I had computers.
You had that stuff.
And I could have that stuff.
If
it
you
was
wanted
the idea.
It.
Here's the difference. My parents would drop me off at the mall with my girlfriends, and I would say, well, Sarah's dad gave her $200. Why aren't you giving me any money? And they'd be like, you know, if you do the dishes, we'll give you $5. You're a kid. What the fuck are you talking about?
So your parents
about?
Were actually realistic and logical about your situation.
And they were like, you are going to turn into a monster.
A dipshit. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they were like, you should go to public school. And they found this great public school that it was going to be more than just me going to public school. It was going to be this amazing experience where I would be with other artists and I would get to do art for a huge part of my day, every single day.
Okay, so I've done 115 shows of this show. Never.
Congratulations.
Why, thank you. Very successful. I'm literally doing it in my apartment. I've never had anyone on that said that my parents were so in tune with what I would become later on that they said, I need to take you the fuck out of this shitty system that is private school.
Mm-hmm.
And even though we can afford to go, here's $200, shithead, go off and spend it on dumb stuff and build you into a person that expects the world to give you everything, they go, you know what, let me put you in a place where you actually will fit in and learn some shit.
Mm-hmm.
That's incredible.
You know, they both didn't grow up with a lot of money, and my dad is self-made, so it was this feeling of, I think, watching your kids and not having a language for what it was, but going, oh, God.
Yeah.
That's not how I looked at the world. Awful. And that's not the way you should look at the world. And you need to be around real people. It's Colorado. You need to be in a school that has some black people in it. Maybe not like world. Everyone is white.
Is
like,
a white,
there
whitey?
Just things that they, I think, realized they, as they went, what their values were. And I think at first you think, I just want to put my kid in the most expensive school possible because they're going to get the best education possible. Therefore, they're going to have the most opportunity.
Opportunities is what
and
it's
about.
And
then it became like, maybe those opportunities are there, but you're going to be a shithead. Like, I don't want to be your
terrible
friend.
So, just so, I mean, the audience knows my story a lot, but... Just so you know, like, obviously we're doing this show not live, but Donald Trump's been elected, and I'm not a political individual, but at the end of the day, like, I know or claim Democrat or Republican, but I do know between how someone's kind of breeding hate and pandering to the fact that we're an uneducated environment and that we don't take life truly seriously. And if you don't know what I mean by that, read all of Kurt Vonnegut. You'll understand what I'm saying. That being said... Engaging with you makes me understand that we are white-looking people. You're white, but are you Jewish too?
I am.
So you're Jewish. Yes. You're not necessarily white. You're Jewish. I am a Hawaiian Sicilian that looks very white. So yes, I've benefited from the fact that, yeah, the cops don't really fuck with me that often. But at the end of the day, I did grow up very broke around a lot of brown people. So a lot of the stuff that we engage with that we think, oh, this is what life's about. Like, we're white people. We need to get America back.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's not really the case. It's a lot of ignorance around here. And what you're saying, and what's great about your story, is your parents go, hey, you touching other cultures and understanding other cultures might be beneficial not only to you as a human being, but also your art and who you are. And they recognize that and they send you to the school. Yeah?
Agreed. I mean, it was a social value over maybe,
amazing,
you know, a mental one. Because I will tell you that in public school, it's like embarrassing how little I know about the world, about
that's
history, about geography. I mean, I did not get a great education.
And that's, I think that's part of the problem too, is that we have a lot of people that never focus on education now. Like so I'm considered a millennial. I'm 35, but I'm still considered the tail end of millennial. Mm-hmm. And you go like, I really didn't, in public school, I grew up in the hood, and you're like, we really didn't learn about a lot of stuff. Like, a lot of stuff I've learned has been over the course of the last like 8 years where I made myself learn it.
Mm-hmm.
And you go, maybe that's why we're failing at picking the right people to lead us. It's very odd. And you're saying that you went to an art school. You go, it's a public school still. So
the education was not great. But you know what? It was just – I wouldn't change it for the world.
It was fulfilling.
It was fulfilling. I was around interesting people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the best education in some ways you can give a child, is just to be around a lot of different interesting people. And I was around driven people, because even though I was around kids that were maybe like fucking up in school and getting – they all cared about something.
Sure.
And
they all cared about whatever the art
they were doing was. They cared about it. Even if they didn't like their teachers, they didn't like the school, even if they were, you know – ditching and smoking pot, everybody had something they cared about. And they
gave a shit about something, which goes a long way.
That's huge.
Because a lot
when
of people
young.
Don't. Oh my
that's
God.
That's huge.
Just to have that,
you have a better chance at anything, I think.
So you went to this school,
mm-hmm.
discovered what you love, and at 18, you're like, peace, I'm going to New York. And where did you go to school in New York?
Sarah Lawrence.
Which is an all female school.
It is not.
Not
that
anymore,
is,
or did it used
huge,
to be?
It was a long time ago. Long.
Okay.
But it's still, I'll tell you what, it's still like, I think when I went there, it was like either 60-40 or 65-35. And you can bet a lot of that 35 is gay. So being a straight
I
man
would
there.
I love to go to Sarah Lawrence.
Listen,
I was just going to say that. I
and there
go
were
to
a
Lawrence
couple like you there, and they were monsters. Because you know what they would do? They would like sleep with a hot girl, and not even like get that she was out of their league.
Sure.
And they then sleep with a different one the next night.
And then they go into the real world and they're like, well, in college.
That's the only thing that made us feel good as girls there is you said, I can't wait for these dipshits to be 22 and to walk into a bar and think that they have any business talking to these women and they have nothing in the real world.
Because they'd be smoking hot, beautiful women at the school that literally had five guys to pick from. And if you were semi-attractive, they would be like, well, fuck, this is the semi-attractive. I'm still a 19-year-old girl. I would love to experiment. And next thing you know, this guy thinks, well, fuck, man, I'm the toast of the town.
It was horrible.
And you're not.
It was horrible to date there. It was horrible to sleep with people there. It was a very strange college experience.
I'm going to go to Sarah Lawrence and do a documentary. I'm going to ask my wife if I have permission to go to Sarah Lawrence and sleep with
numerous women. Permission. I'm going to weigh in on that one and just say.
Don't let them go to Sarah Lawrence. They're starving there for real men.
You know, it's been years. I don't know if it's changed, but that's how it was when I went there, and it was a nightmare.
And you majored in theater.
So Sarah Lawrence is a lot like just going to adult camp. A lot. Like, I'm telling you so much.
I love Sarah Lawrence because I've met a lot of girls. I've dated girls who went to Sarah Lawrence. Every time they're amazing.
They are. They're the best kind.
I don't know what it is because they really love their femininity. They really love it.
Yes.
They embody it.
Yes. It's a school of feminists and it's an amazing school. I loved it. But you got to really design your education, but to a degree that, let me just break it down as quick as I can by saying, you do not have majors. You do not have grades. You do not have requirements.
It's the most hippie shit I've ever heard.
Oh, it's yeah. Underwater basket weaving.
That's equivalent
to white
girl wasted for all you 22-year-olds. That's white girl wasted.
You could do whatever you wanted. So I did a lot of theater and I did a lot of anthropology and literature and just psychology and was in plays all the time. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot like being at camp. I was busy all the time. I worked my ass off.
Yeah.
But it was working on only stuff I wanted.
And you were like, how do I make money?
Yes.
Right?
Oh, absolutely.
And you come from this background where your dad is self-made. He knows how to make money. He knows how to make a living, and he figured it out. And you grew up in a way where you're like, money can happen. You believe. That's the thing I think growing up poor, I think that was the biggest obstacle to get over is understanding how to make money because a lot of people don't. And if you see that your family makes some money, you go, well, that's fucking possible. Possibility is a big thing. So you're someone that goes – my family does well, even though they were hard on me in a good way. Money's possible. But then you go to this art school and you get out and you come to New York City and you're like, well, how the fuck does people – how do I make money? So how do you make money?
I don't. I still don't.
None.
I know. I really still don't.
It's paycheck to paycheck, hand to mouth.
Absolutely.
Craziness.
No savings account. That's not a thing. That's not a thing. I'm glad I'm not in credit card debt. I feel great about that.
That's huge score, actually.
There's a huge difference, though, between me and a lot of people my age that are in the same position, which is that I don't have student loans.
Yeah.
And that's where having parents that have money and that believe in you and believe in education.
Yeah.
Hello, we're Jewish.
Yeah,
believe in education.
Of course you do.
So, but that's a big...
That you get to start your life from scratch, not from behind.
I don't take it for granted ever. Yes.
That's awesome.
I'm not behind.
All you have to do is make your rent.
Yeah. I'm still the spoiled girl they didn't want me to be that gets to act for a living.
Yeah.
Because I don't have these loans to pay.
So I was in Europe, as the audience knows, for a month. And I go to Europe often the last 4 years. And what I always come back with is that feeling of what we miss out, I think, here in America is someone who is poor or without money in Europe, if they have wisdom and value, they have a life. You respect them. And I think what we've built into society here is that if you don't have money, you have failed, which isn't necessarily true. I mean, I'm really good at some things. If you want to come to me and talk about how to structure a joke, and there's a lot of stuff I'm really good at and I can make money doing it, but if it goes the way it's going and if my life were to end tomorrow, I would not have been technically a success because everyone has known about me and a lot of money. It's very odd that money – because there's a lot of dipshits I've met, and I've used this word a lot because that's the nicest word I can use right now is dipshit, that make money in Wall Street, make money in finance, or make money in some other endeavor where they have no fucking value, have no worth. They can't bring you anything. They can't sit there and quote
from a great book, mm-hmm. or drink from a great book, if you will, or talk to you about anything that's worthwhile in life that could move you to the next step soulfully. They can't talk about that. Mm-hmm. They can't talk to you about is how to make $1 million by ripping people off. They can mm-hmm. talk to you about that. And that is more respected than what we do. And that's problematic for me.
Mm-hmm.
In the words of Mario Puzo, like, it's a lot of Fredos, not a lot of Michaels. Mm-hmm. If you ever read that book, Godfather, read the book, not the movie. You'll know what I'm talking
Don't
about.
Read the movie.
Don't read the movie, because then you got a lot of problems. You're not from this country. So what I think is really great about your story is that you're really appreciative of the fact that you have these opportunities in front of you now, granted by your parents, even though you're still struggling. So you're a struggling artist, but you still have that, like,
you know, but I'm
but
a
wink, wink, I'm not.
Yeah, I'm
right?
Well, I'm a struggling artist, and I the biggest thing, more than the money, or maybe not more than the money, but in addition to the money, my parents always said they were glad that I was an artist. And mm-hmm. that's a really big thing, too.
Huge.
Just to feel like
you still didn't let them
emotional
down.
Support is – I've not let them down at all. I've done the opposite.
That's awesome.
They're proud of me all the time that I'm still in New York, that I'm still trying to do this for my life,
mm-hmm.
that I'm creating things.
Yeah.
They are – every time I get on the phone with one of them, it's like, what is Accomplice doing? What is the new show you're writing?
Mm-hmm.
Were you acting this weekend? And they're so happy that I am and that I do.
That's so great.
Absolutely.
It's amazing.
And I'm
you're
the
so
oldest
lucky.
Of – four girls.
And I'm sure they're all very different, right? You
Super,
guys are all
you know,
very different.
It's funny, my sister right under me, Brianna, she's 3 years, actor, writer, director. She's just like me.
Mm-hmm.
And she's totally amazing artist. And my sister Whitney is just got out of the army.
Oh my God.
Isn't
Israeli army?
No, no. Oh my God, no. The American. But what is
but
it?
That's great.
Know? Yeah. It's
so she's
really
like
different.
Very different.
And now she's going to school to become a service dog trainer.
What about the fourth one?
She just graduated this last year and she's going to be
school?
A kindergarten teacher.
Or college.
College.
Okay.
Kindergarten teacher.
So they have a wide range of daughters.
Yeah.
Your poor father.
Right? The
five
only man.
Women in his house.
Yeah.
Holy
the only
shit,
man.
Dude.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, because it's going to happen to me.
You
it.
Think?
Oh my God! I've been
Only
sleeping
girls?
With everybody for years. There's no way
There's
that
no way.
The great creator goes, this guy needs to have women in his life all the time, and then he has to deal with the fact that they're going to be related to him and his daughters. He has to protect them. They're going to be very attractive, and he's going to have to shoot men in the balls. I'm going to shoot all the men in the balls.
You're going to talk like Donald Trump about your daughters.
Not at all. I would never want to bang my daughters. It's never going to happen. Never want to say to
you
myself,
"You haven't
I need
met him yet."
Maybe I'll bang my daughters. I have very great genetics. If it happens, I will say this could happen. But hopefully it will not. Plug your shit. Plug where you're at.
Oh, okay. Accomplice has a few new shows.
Well, what's the handles? Like, where can people follow up? There's accomplice.com, right?
www.accomplicetheshow.com. That's our website.
What's the Instagram again?
Accomplice show.
Dot. Well, Accomplice show is a handle.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Do we have a fucking Snapchat yet?
No, I don't really know how to. Maybe
okay,
you can teach me how to do
I will
Snapchat.
Teach you that.
I don't understand.
Well, we definitely
Snapchat.
Have a Twitter.
Yes.
What is that?
Accomplice Show.
And what is your shit? How do people follow you specifically?
Specifically,
I've been drinking.
Accomplice.
You are the. So anything that has to do with Accomplice, you're literally following Quinn.
Yeah.
Correct?
Like, no one can follow me as a human being.
So you don't have anything.
I'm a very private person.
Okay, so. Quinn will only.
That's
will
why I'm on a podcast.
You. That's true. Quinn will only via interact you with the Accomplice.
Yes.
So that's how they find out shit about you.
Yeah.
So plug what's going on. What else is what can they go look for?
I would say we just developed a new show called The Golden Spork that is a progressive dinner show.
And when would that you think that'll be off the ground?
It's our first performance of it is Sunday.
Sunday. What is that? The 13th.
Something like that.
So November 13th, this show will not be out then.
Start,
but it's going to be numerous shows. So
you can't go by yourself to this one. This
you
is
have to
corporate.
Bring, you have to
this is a private party. This is
the peeps with
party
you.
Time.
And that's all. They can book all that through the Accomplice website.
Completely.
Okay. Is there any other shows you're working on that we should know about that people should go search for?
No, I would really say I don't know if your audience is made out of people with babies, but they should go see
Probably
the kid
not.
Show.
There is that kid show is really great.
Maybe we'll do it once on like 420 for grown-ups. It's so good.
If you smoke a lot of dope, the kids show would be amazing.
Go see it.
Dope heads too.
Completely.
Amazing. Are you happy you came on? I think you were really great.
Yeah, I feel great about it.
So fun, right?
It's the best.
So amazing. I'm going to Sarah Lawrence. Thank you, Quinn. You're a lovely woman. Splendid. If you're listening, thank you again. Thanks for coming in. Just so cool. It sounds patronizing, but I mean it. You're really great. Make sure you guys go follow Accomplice on Instagram, Twitter, at Accomplice, and the website, the Accomplice website, so you can book your tickets directly right there. They make it really easy for you, and if you're coming to New York, or if you live in New York, do it now. They sell out. The season is still going for the Village show, but they have a New York show. That's the show that I'm typically in, that starts up in March. So for all you people that are ready to roll, do it up. Do it in advance. Do it quick. Okay. All right. Thanks again, Quinn. Thanks for listening to the show, Broken Tail Dog Podcast with your boy, Josh Accardo. It's been an amazing 2016, and we're wrapping it up here soon. I have two more really fantastic shows for you to come out, and I'm really excited. They're really, really sum up the great part of the year. So I'm looking to not only take this walk that we've already taken per 2016, but make it a run in 2017. Make it a run, motherfucker. All right. Thanks, guys. You're great. Enjoy the rest of your week. Talk to you next week. Later.
Oh, your daddy's rich. And your ma is good looking.